The Global Security Department sought to reduce the risk that Indonesian soldiers protecting the gas fields would engage in abuses by requesting that the soldiers assigned to ExxonMobil refrain from sweep or offensive operations outside of the strict mission of defending the gas fields. Yet the corporation also endorsed the Indonesian Army's and Police's plans to construct a layered defense around the Mobil property, including a forward perimeter of security posts to catch GAM guerrillas as they tried to approach. In effect, this defense system created an infrastructure of patrolling and interrogation on and adjacent to Mobil's fields. ExxonMobil urged the TNI units in Aceh to be defensive, not offensive, according to an individual involved, as nobody wanted to have any sort of cloud over our operations. The Indonesian military units were supposedly in static defensive positions that would go out roughly 5 kilometers on each side to prevent direct or indirect fire from coming at us. Inevitably, even defensive patrolling would involve detentions and interrogations of GAM suspects. Published human rights reports, including that by the U.S. government, made clear that the questioning of guerrilla suspects by Indonesian officers there, as elsewhere, was not likely to be polite. Yet as late as 2003, ExxonMobil had no written internal codes or guidelines for the use of force that could be handed out to soldiers or police protecting the corporation's property, according to statements made by ExxonMobil executives to American officials in another country with mounting security problems, Nigeria. Even if ExxonMobil did not like the voluntary principles, there were other international standards for police conduct to which governments like Indonesia's were bound by treaty. These included the United Nations Convention on Human Rights, the United Nations Code of Conduct for Law Enforcement Officials, and the United Nations Guidelines on Use of Force. The International Committee of the Red Cross also published standards for the appropriate use of minimal force by police. Royal Dutch Shell, which had already been stung in Africa by allegations arising from police and military excesses in defense of its oil properties, had developed Rules for Guidance in the Use of Firearms by the Police, which it wrote down on two-sided laminated cards and handed out to personnel assigned to defend its properties. ExxonMobil resisted writing down such rules. American lawyers advised their international oil clients that such a formal move could expose the company to undue liabilities, according to a State Department account. The constraints ExxonMobil sought to impose on the TNI were therefore conveyed informally and vaguely. In private meetings, ExxonMobil's security officers told their Indonesian counterparts, "We couldn't operate without you guys. We recognize the sacrifice you're making, and we respect the professionalism, and no human rights issues." These informal lectures on human rights reached the point of being a cliché, recalled an individual involved. "The instruction we got was, 'Do not look like you're aiding or abetting the army in any way,'" recalled a second individual involved. The Indonesian army officers deployed to protect ExxonMobil against GAM attacks sometimes resented the lectures they received. Some of the Indonesian officers battling GAM made clear to their ExxonMobil liaisons that they thought the Americans were out of their depth. Gusty winds blew a cold rain across Washington on March 12, 2001. Alwi Shihab, Indonesia's foreign minister, an Islamic scholar with a doctoral degree in religious studies from Temple University in Philadelphia, arrived by limousine at the State Department. He entered under a canopy and ascended to the ornate seventh-floor office occupied by Colin Powell, his counterpart in the newly arrived Bush administration. After an exchange of pleasantries, Shihab raised the conundrums of Aceh's war. GAM's threats against ExxonMobil amounted to blackmail, the foreign minister told Powell. He hoped investments by American corporations in Indonesia would lead the new administration to reaffirm the country's integrity. "With $38 billion at stake in Indonesia, the United States would not want to see the country disintegrate." President Wahid's government would be grateful for American backing in the effort to calm Aceh's violence, he continued. "Not in terms of public intervention, but through private messages to GAM that might have great weight on the other side. As in the Middle East, the United States had the leverage in Aceh to force the two sides to negotiate, Shihab believed. His government was willing to give the Achenese everything short of independence, he said. Powell said that if the Indonesian military abused civilians in Aceh, it could cause the greatest harm to the country's relationship with the Bush administration. It was critical that the Indonesian military apply only that force that was reasonable and necessary to the task, he said. The secretary made clear, however, that he had taken note of Shihab's message that there might be a role for the United States to send signals to the other side in Aceh's war. ExxonMobil's gas operations in Aceh had now become embedded within U.S. diplomatic and intelligence priorities in Indonesia. The Bush administration sought, overall, to support Indonesia's fragile democracy, improve civilian control over the military, stanch human rights violations, and suppress Islamist radicals, goals that sometimes competed with one another, because the Indonesian military was at once a potential source of stability and instability. ExxonMobil seemed to be both part of the problem and part of the solution in Aceh. On the one hand, its gas production seemed to provoke and exacerbate guerrilla violence, and that violence encouraged unacceptable abuses by the military. Yet the revenue ExxonMobil's gas sales provided Jakarta was critical to the country's young democracy. The Bush administration found itself simultaneously under pressure from ExxonMobil to do something about the deteriorating Aceh war, and from the Indonesian government to do something about ExxonMobil's unwillingness to operate amid guerrilla violence. The corporation's decision to shut down gas production that spring had provoked an outcry in Indonesia's parliament. Politicians threatened to nationalize the gas fields. They summoned Ron Wilson, the ExxonMobil country manager, to a parliamentary hearing to explain the corporation's thinking. Other politicians spoke darkly about American conspiracies to undermine Indonesia's fragile democratic government. Some accused Gelbard of forcing ExxonMobil to close down.